So, Matt, we started this thing where I'm running every day for 15 minutes. But if I miss a day, I just add 15 minutes to the next day, right? And it has been a game changer in my life. Tomorrow, I'm supposed to run for 3 months.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the graveyard. Thank you for joining us tonight. My name is Adam.
And my name's Matt.
Now, pull up a tombstone or settle into your casket and get comfortable, because this is Graveyard Tales.
All right, everybody, here we are again. Matt, how you doing tonight, brother?
Man, I'm doing good.
Good, good. So before we get into it, we'll say go over to patreon.com/graveyardtales. You can sign up to become a patron. I got tongue-tied there. We have a huge back catalog of bonus episodes that you can check out. We've been doing it for years, and we honestly think that any level that you pick, it's a good value.
Oh, yeah.
Because whatever patronage tier you choose, you get a bonus episode a week. But if you do the $5 or $10, you get the bonus episode, plus you get ad-free audio and video versions of our main episodes. So if we have an ad that week, we'll put up the ad-free on Patreon. But then if you go up to $10 a month, you get all of that, plus you get our second show, Side Quest, which Matt and I... It's a different way to experience me and Matt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
we are not as filtered. And it's basically like hanging out with me and Matt. Sometimes we play games. Sometimes we play trivia. Sometimes I just tell Matt an interesting historical thing or a survival story or something like that. But if you want to help support me and Matt, Patreon is probably... the best way you could do that.
Oh yeah, no doubt. At any level, we appreciate all of it. And like Adam said, we feel like the amount of bonus content you get, you're definitely getting your money's worth, and you're helping the show, and we appreciate it so much.
Mm-hmm, for sure. If you don't want to do that, but you still want to help the show, then go check out our sponsors. If you go to one of our sponsors' websites by using the link in our show notes and you use our code, it'll get you a discount, and it will tell them that you heard about them from us, and then they will come back and sponsor another episode of Graveyard Tales. So that also helps us out as well. All right, Matt. So that's all I got for housekeeping today. So why don't you tell us, what are we talking about tonight, brother?
Oh, tonight is, these are some of my favorite episodes. Talking about a haunted castle. You can't get any better, in my opinion, yep, than a haunted castle. And the one we're talking about tonight is... It is really, really busy over there. You know, I don't know how the people that have to manage, you know, the property and everything, how they can get anything done with all these extra spirits running around. You know, it's just, it is so active. And we're talking about Glamis Castle, mm-hmm, in Angus, Scotland. It is a 650-year-old castle. And I don't know if it's the American in me, because we don't have places this old over here.
Yeah, it's probably that.
Yeah. And so when I think about any building that's 600 and something years old,
mm-hmm,
and the history that transpired there, it is unfathomable.
Yeah.
To me, it's every stinking castle, you know, across the entire UK is probably haunted as all get out, mm-hmm, because they're just so old.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah. But Glamis Castle in Scotland is an amazing piece of architecture. It is gorgeous. It is majestic. It is mysterious looking. Everything. I mean, it checks all the boxes. It was the childhood home of Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, the birthplace of Princess Margaret, and it was also the inspiration for Shakespeare's Macbeth.
Yep.
So, I mean, you don't get any better than this. So,
yep.
And as I said, you know, the history is rich and deep and brutal,
yep,
in some respects. So you're going to enjoy Adam and I digging into Glamis Castle.
Oh, for sure. And Matt just covered every bit of history so I was talking about, so we're done.
Oh,
let's just cut. No, I'm kidding. As we always say, go check our sources down at the bottom of the show notes. You can find where we found all the information, and you can double check, make sure we're telling you the correct information, because everything we talk about is sourced and referenced in our show notes. So Glamis Castle has over 1,000 years of recorded history for that area.
Oh,
the
yeah.
Castle is not 1,000 years old, but the land that it sits on has over 1,000 years of recorded history. So, needless to say, we're just basically doing a down and dirty version of the history. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on any particular point in the history, so we can get through it. We can get on to the part that Matt will cover. And so I don't have y'all going to sleep on me.
I don't think you can for this place.
Yeah, no, probably not. Cause this does have some crazy history, but, we're going to do the down and dirty version of the history here. So buckle up and let's go. Now, the site of Glamis Castle was associated with royal power by the early 11th century, when King Malcolm II of Alba was said to have been assassinated there in 1034. And it suggests that there was an established royal residence or a hunting lodge on the land. So it started out as either a royal homestead or a royal hunting lodge. Now, by the 14th century, this early residence formed the core of what would become the castle. It's probably a fortified house with a courtyard used by Scottish kings for hunting in Angus. Now, in the Wars of Independence, the lands of Glamis passed between rival factions before King Robert the Bruce. I mean, even us Americans know who Robert the Bruce
is. That's right. 100%. If you haven't ever watched Braveheart, what are you doing with your life?
Right, right. And I mean, don't hold it against us that that's the first place we heard the name Robert the Bruce, or that's what goes through our head when we hear Robert the Bruce.
Right.
Just
right.
Be proud of us Americans that we know who Robert the Bruce is.
That's right.
It passed through rival factions' hands before Robert the Bruce brought them back firmly under the Scottish crown in 1329. He reclaimed them for the Balliol family. Now, this set the stage for Glamis to be granted out as a great feudal holding to a rising noble family that was loyal to the Bruce and Stuart dynasty. Now, in 1372, King Robert II granted the thanage, or the barony, of Glamis to Sir John Lyon of Forteviot, whatever, you know.
Yeah, that thing.
That thing, making the place the ancestral seat of the Lyon family. Now, Sir John soon strengthened his status by marrying the king's daughter, Princess Joanna Stuart, firmly tying Glamis to the royal house. Now, Sir John's descendants transformed the hunting lodge into a substantial late medieval stronghold beginning around 1400 to 1404. And Patrick Lyon, Sir John's grandson, created first Lord Glamis in 1445, starting work on the Great Tower around the 1430s to the 1480s. And it produced the tall L-plan core that still underlies the silhouette of the castle. Now, in the 16th century, Glamis was drawn into bitter politics during the Douglas family and King James V deal, where Janet Douglas, Lady Glamis, was accused, almost certainly falsely, this says, of treason and of trying to poison the king. Well, she was condemned and she was burned at the stake in Edinburgh on July 17th, 1537, and Glamis was fortified to the crown at that point. Now, after Janet's execution, James V occupied Glamis himself until his death in 1542, effectively turning the castle into a royal fortress for several years. In 1542-1543, the estate and title were restored to John Lyon, 7th Lord Glamis, reversing the forfeiture and returning the property to the family line. Now, Mary, Queen of Scots, visited Glamis on August 22nd, 1562. She stayed for two nights and dined in the Great Hall, which is now the drawing room, while she was traveling north to suppress a rebellion. Her visit added what they call another layer of royal association to a house already deeply entwined in the Stuart monarchy. Now, in 1606, Patrick Lyon, 9th Lord Glamis, was created Earl of Kinghorn, marking the family's elevation in the peerage. He initiated major rebuilding, commemorated by the inscription, quote, "Built by Patrick, Lord Glamis, and Dame Anna Murray," on the central tower. So he reshaped the castle into something closer to its current form. Now, during the mid-17th century civil wars, Cromwell's troops occupied Glamis in 1650. They call it a reminder that the house was both strategically significant and symbolically important. Well, despite this disruption, the fabric of the castle survived and continued to be enhanced by its owners after the conflict. Patrick, 3rd Earl, oversaw extensive renovations between 1670 and 1689, further enlarging and refining the structure. In 1677, he was granted the additional title of Earl of Strathmore and Kinghorn, the style still associated with the Bowes Lyon family today. Now, the earliest chapel was completed and dedicated in 1688, reflecting the piety and status of the family. It later became central to both Jacobite memory and to the legends of ghosts associated with Glamis, including the figure of the Grey Lady that Matt, I'm sure, has some stuff on.
No.
Well, I can tell it. No, I'm just kidding. In the 1715 Jacobite Rising, John Lyon, 5th Earl of Strathmore, supported the cause and was killed at the Battle of Sheriffmuir. Shortly afterward, in January 1716, James Stuart, quote, "the old pretender," styling himself James the 8th and 3rd, stayed at Glamis with his supporters and reportedly, quote, "touched locals for the king's evil in the chapel." Now, I had to look this up because I didn't know what it meant, and it felt weird to be saying he touched locals for the king's evil.
He's just walking around.
Mm-hmm.
I'm touching just, you.
Just touching people for the king's evil. So I here's what I found about that, so that we're all on the same page and we don't go down the weird track my mind went when I first read that. Touching for the king's evil refers to a long-standing royal ritual in which a king laid hands on people suffering from scrofula, which is a form of tuberculosis.
Scrofula.
Scrofula. They believe that as God's anointed, he could cure them. So by the early 18th century, the Hanoverians had largely abandoned this practice, which to me, if you're a Hanoverian, the way you spell it is almost hand over. I would think you would be all about it, putting your hand over people. But that's just, again, my dumb brain. But the Stuarts continued it as a political and religious statement. James, performing this rite in the chapel at Glamis would have been highly symbolic. It presented him as a true sacred monarch, exercising an age-old royal miracle, and offered local people both a blessing and a tangible way to show loyalty. So it wasn't nearly as dirty or perverted as I thought it was, thankfully. Now, in 1728, Charles, 6th Earl of Strathmore, was killed in a drunken skirmish in Forfar, continuing a pattern of violent ends among some family members. In 1767, John Lyon, 9th Earl, married the wealthy English heiress Mary Eleanor Bowes, bringing vast estate and prompting the later adoption of the compound surname Bowes Lyon. The west wing was rebuilt in 1801, giving the castle its extended wings flanking the central block. And in the later 19th century, the family introduced modern comforts such as gas lighting and running water, blending medieval and baronial architecture with Victorian technology. Now, after the 10th Earl died in 1820, his illegitimate son, John Bowes, was denied the earldom, which passed to Thomas, who became 11th Earl and formalized the Lyon Bowes, later the Bowes Lyon surname. The family continued to hold Glamis as the principal Scottish seat, maintaining its role as both a private residence and a symbol of lineage. Now, Glamis became closely linked to the modern British royal family when it served as the childhood home of Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, born Elizabeth Bowes Lyon. Her second daughter, Princess Margaret, was born at Glamis in 1930, making the castle a royal birthplace as well as a noble seat. Now, in 1937, the 14th Earl and Countess attended the coronation of King George VI, underlying their royal connections. In 1950, Glamis Castle opened to the public for the first time, beginning its modern life as a major visitor attraction while remaining home to the Earl of Strathmore and Kinghorne's family. Now, Glamis is famously associated with Shakespeare's tragedy Macbeth, in which Macbeth holds the title Thane of Glamis. And the castle today promotes this link through things like a Macbeth sculpture, or a Macbeth sculpture trail in its grounds. Now, while the play's events are fictionalized, the connection has helped cement Glamis as one of Scotland's most storied and symbolically charged castles.
Yep. And I was just looking at Google Earth images of it. I mean, it's incredible. And you can understand why Shakespeare would have wanted to incorporate a castle mm-hmm. such as this into one of his plays, especially one as, you know, dark and tragic as Macbeth. It has that feel. It has that, a castle feel. That sounds so stupid, but it does. you see some of these places and they're like, it's either so old that it's kind of broken down and it doesn't have mm-hmm. that majesty to it, or it was an architecture from, you know, 1,000 years ago and they didn't look like what you picture in your head, not like Cinderella's castle with the turrets and everything. And Glamis has all that, so it really does have that presence. But I think part of that, that imagery adds to the spooky, creepy, haunted vibe that you get when you visit there. And most visitors will report that sensation of unease or dread, especially in specific rooms or areas around the grounds. But they say, and I don't know who they are, but they say there are at least six spirits known to wander around the grounds at Glamis Castle.
Having six known is quite a bit.
Yeah. I mean, that's highly unusual, but some sources will say there are as many as nine.
Oh, wow.
That are known to wander around. And as we get into it, you'll see that maybe, you know, one spirit is responsible for a certain area, and depending on how it appears or where it appears, you know, some researchers may say that this is more than one. But they do connect these spirits to, you know, members of the family that lived there at one time.
Right. All right, Matt, so let's take a second and talk about tonight's sponsor, Masterclass. Now, we've talked about them before, and one of the things I love about them is that I'm able to listen to them on the go, and I have picked a couple Masterclasses, one by Malcolm Gladwell that teaches writing, and then another from Ken Burns about documentary filmmaking, and the one I just started is Learn How to Tell a Great Story with Big Short and Moneyball author Michael Lewis. So I guess you can guess by all of those why I'm doing them, but it's helping Graveyard Tales. So I can listen to it on the go when I'm going to pick up the kid from school and stuff like that. And they are great. I love them. And I have recommended these Masterclasses to everybody.
Yeah, with Masterclass, you can learn from the best to become your best. With plans starting at $10 a month, billed annually, you get unlimited access to over 200 classes taught by the world's best business leaders, writers, chefs, and more. With Masterclass, you get thousands of bite-sized lessons across 13 categories that can fit into even the busiest schedule. And you can do what Adam does, turn your commute or workout into a classroom. Mm-hmm. With audio mode, you can listen to Masterclass lessons anytime, anywhere. Headed on a trip, download classes to watch offline and make the most of your travel time. And the classes really make a difference. 3 in 4 surveyed members feel inspired every time they watch Masterclass. So right now, our listeners get an additional 15% off any annual membership at masterclass.com/graveyard. That's G-R-A-V-E-Y-A-R-D.
That's right. That's 15% off at masterclass.com/graveyard, G-R-A-V-E-Y-A-R-D, masterclass.com/graveyard.
But even as Adam said, that the treachery of someone being falsely accused of trying to poison the king and then being executed right there, I mean, it was a common thing. But why would anybody at that time want to be a part of or connected to any of these royals? Because this crap happened all the time.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You were plotting to kill the king. No, I wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Oh, no, yes, you absolutely were. I wasn't.
I didn't even think about it.
Yeah.
It wasn't even on my mind.
And it's like a trial is a joke, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because they already know what they're going to do. And, you know, you can't say anything that's going to defend yourself. And then you're just like, oh, well. You know, it was a good run while it lasted.
Yeah. Better than being a peasant, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. The dining room, which Adam mentioned earlier when Mary, Queen of Scots, was there, which is now the drawing room. is one place that in the castle that has quite a bit of activity. The crypt that is there in the castle, you would expect, you know, if anywhere in this place is going to be haunted, it's going to be the crypt. And there's a lot of not necessarily apparitions around the crypt, but a lot of that. I don't feel right when I'm here. There's an energy here that just puts a weight on you as you enter.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a room in the castle called the Hangman's Chamber. It is said that a butler once hanged himself there and that his spirit still haunts that room. Faces will appear in windows. There are cold spots. And there is a bent old lady who carries a bundle of cloth to the middle of the courtyard before disappearing.
That's weird.
And banging and knocking noises are also quite common, which, you know, it's an old castle. Old castles bang and knock, you know? It's like,
yeah,
it's like, you know, think about your house that was, you know, built probably in the 70s and it settles and knocks and creaks. Not your house, Adam.
Well,
your house wasn't built in the 70s.
No, it wasn't.
Mine was built in the 60s and it makes all kinds of noise. Okay. Imagine if it was 650 years old. It'd scream at you.
Yeah, okay? Right. I mean, you just think about, okay, I personally was built in the 80s and my joints scream at me yes. when I do certain things.
Yes, right, right.
So I can only imagine a house's joints doing that.
Yeah. So imagine a 600 some odd year old castle. Man, mm-hmm. this thing makes a lot of racket. But one of the more interesting spirits is the ghost of a young page boy that haunts the Queen Mother's sitting room. Now, this boy in life was known for mischief, and they would try to discipline him, and he still got into trouble. But the form of discipline they would use was that he would be told to sit on a stone seat to think about what he had done wrong.
Huh.
That works every time.
Yeah.
Right.
That'll just give him hemorrhoids.
Oh, God. I didn't think about that.
See? Yeah.
But on one cold winter night, he got in trouble and was made to sit on the stone. Eventually, everybody went to bed and they forgot to dismiss the young boy from his seat. And for once, it says, he obeyed and remained seated. So, unfortunately, he froze to death during the night and was found the following day still sitting on the stone. Now, today, his ghost, which is still quite mischievous, tends to stick out a foot to trip up any visitors as they walk into the room. Now,
you know, if I was a ghost, I might do that too.
Yeah, that would be one of the best tricks to pull. But you got to have enough energy to actually trip somebody.
That's a good point.
Manifest a whole like foot and ankle so that you could trip somebody up.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to try this just to see. Because I have tripped walking into rooms so many times that now I'm just going to start saying, we've got a ghost that likes to trip people as they walk into this room, and he catches me more than anybody else.
Yeah, yeah. It's a good excuse.
I would love to be like carrying something when I visited there and just go walking into that room. And you go, they say there's a ghost that'll trip you when you walk in here and just like throw it up in the air, you know, trip, sling it everywhere. Just make it huge. Now, behind one of the thick stone walls in this area is a secret chamber. Now, the secret chamber has got many, many legends. Now, here, one of the lords of Glamis, Earl Beardy, as he was known, was playing cards with the Tiger Earl of Crawford. And he said it was, he was reluctant to give up his game. He needed to win his money back. So even though the Sabbath was quickly approaching, you know, it was nearing midnight, which, you know, no gambling on the Sabbath, but I mean, you know, no sooner had the clock struck midnight than the story is that the devil appeared to Earl Beardy and asked if he could join in the game.
Huh.
Now, Earl Beardy was not, let's put it this way. If anybody that lived in this castle was going to play cards with the devil, it was Earl Beardy. Okay. He had some shady stuff going on, and
playing, he was that joker,
playing cards with the devil was absolutely in his wheelhouse. So the, you know, Beardy said, absolutely. But when you gamble with the devil, eventually you're going to have to pay up. And he gambled away his soul and he died shortly after. Now, for years, the sound of cursing and swearing were heard echoing from this room at night. And in an attempt to quiet this disturbance, they bricked up the chamber.
Hmm.
But it says the foul-mouthed phantom could not be confined. And his ghost is still said to roam the castle in the dead of night. And there are several reports of ghosts waking up to find him leaning over their beds, staring at them with, this is evil intent. And then he swears at them.
Yeah. You beep, beep, beep,
and,
beep.
And he throws a deck of cards at him. I mean, you know, come on. You're gonna gamble with the devil. You got to know. You know, the cards are stacked against you. You know, and that's not, you know, pun intended there.
Right, right.
But they, well, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, how many times have we heard a story of the devil joining in on a gambling table?
Yeah.
I mean, what was that, that other haunted place because of the secret society?
Yeah, the Hellfire Club.
Hellfire Club.
That is exactly what I was thinking of. Yeah.
And I mean, you got to know if you're gambling late at night, especially late at night in a castle,
yeah.
one of these fools is probably the devil.
Yeah.
And don't wager stuff like your soul or, you know, your firstborn. Or if somebody says, hey, you can't pay this next bet, but if you'll wager your soul or, you know what, give me your firstborn. If you lose, don't think I've got this in the bag. Think that's the devil. I'm folding.
Yeah. Fold.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You got to know when to hold them and know when to fold them.
Yeah. And you know, what's so funny about this is that the image that comes to mind, you know, there are paintings of, you know, artist rendering of some, you know, character from antiquity gambling, playing cards against the devil. And the devil is always in that traditional devil garb. So the devil is all stretched out in a chair with this big red, you know, cape and the horns and the little pointy beard. And he's got his pitchfork in one hand and his cards fanned out in the other. And I'm going, is this what you wear to play cards? So the devil,
yeah, no.
The devil has more wardrobe than this, I would assume. Yeah. You know,
don't bring your pitchfork to a card game, man.
It's so funny that they, you know, these paintings are just so detailed, and it's like he's always in Underwood deviled ham guy. You know,
yeah. Well, and they're so literal.
Yes,
you know, it's like I think you could get across to us that that's the devil without the pitchfork.
Exactly.
And stuff.
Be like the, be more like the devil in the show Disenchantment. Did you ever watch that?
I never
did. I'm telling you, man, it's, you will absolutely love it. I mean, it's, It's done by Matt Groening. I mean, it is The Simpsons if it took place in medieval times. I'm telling you, it's fantastic. But the devil in that, he wears like a suit, like a tuxedo, but he's still got the little horns and a little beard, you know, but he's dressed up real dapper. That's the devil you play cards
with. That would work.
Yeah.
That would work.
So let's get back to old Earl Beardy. Why is it so hard to say? It's too many R's together. Earl Beardy. Yeah, Beardy. Really
Earl Beardy.
They say he was a very harsh and cruel man. He could have been either Alexander Lyon, the second Lord Glamis, or Alexander Lindsay, the fourth Earl of Crawford. We don't really know which one carried this nickname, okay? But both of these guys apparently sucked, because if Beardy was cruel, it was one of these two. So it wasn't like one of them was a sweetheart, you know? No, they both weren't, you know, really nice people.
Right.
So they could, you know, one or the other held this nickname. But Earl Beardy existed at some point. We know that there was really somebody that they called that. Now, one day he and his friends were bored and they decided to have fun. Now, you can imagine, if you're a cruel and wealthy aristocrat, having fun usually is going to involve something pretty grotesque and horrifying.
Yeah.
Well, sure enough, one of the black servants was stripped naked and forced to run around the castle grounds. This form of entertainment eventually turned dark. It was already dark.
Yeah.
Because it turned into a hunt. So it got darker. It was bad enough you made this poor guy run around the castle naked. Now you're going to hunt him.
That's insane.
But this poor man was chased down by Beardy, his guests, and their dogs, and was completely torn apart.
Jeez.
His spirit has been seen running through the corridors of the castle in an apparent panic. Yeah, absolutely. What a terrible way,
that's awful.
To die, and then have your spirit stuck here to forever run around this castle in panic.
Mm-hmm.
Lord. Now, there are parts of the castle and people that are associated with it that are much more gentle and kind. The castle's peaceful chapel is where you find the Gray Lady that Adam mentioned earlier, who is thought to be the ghost of Janet Douglas, the wife of John, 6th Lord Glamis. Now, King James V hated the Douglases, okay? The Douglas clan, you know, he would routinely write out Douglas clan, put a red circle around it with a line through it, okay? He hated them. But the reason he hated them is because he had been completely dominated by his Douglas stepfather and manipulated by other members of the family. So it sounds like James V had some good reason to dislike the Douglas bunch.
Yeah.
Now, following the death of her husband, Janet married Archibald Campbell. I love this. Archibald Campbell of Skipness. Skipness.
That's an interesting title.
Yeah. I'm thinking Skipness must have been the area he was from.
Mm-hmm.
But he sounds very happy. What if he skipped all the time? You know, he just...
Oh, that'd be great.
There's old Archibald. He's skipping around again.
Look at him. Look, he's coming.
But Janet married him and brought him to live with her at Glamis. But James had been waging this vendetta against the Douglas clan, and they describe this as just an act of petulant spite. He turned his attention to the very popular and very beautiful Lady Campbell and arrested her on this trumped up charge of witchcraft.
Hmm.
So on July 17th, 1537, She was led from Edinburgh Castle and burned at the stake on Castle Hill. Jeez. And her ghost has been seen many times in the chapel, kneeling in silent prayer. And she's described as a shimmering, translucent figure who gives off this aura of peaceful tranquility and then melts into nothingness, you know, after a short while.
We don't often hear about a spirit that gives off tranquility.
Right.
We might hear about one that doesn't give off an air of fear, you know, like I wasn't afraid of them, but they didn't show up and then you felt tranquil.
Yeah.
You know?
But it, you know, when you research Janet Douglas, Janet Campbell at the time of her death, you find that she was beloved and that she was not only, you know, kind and well liked by the servants and, you know, the people that interacted with her. She was very, very beautiful. And people that have witnessed her spirit say the same. They say, you know, it is the spirit of a beautiful woman. Strikingly so. In fact, one paranormal investigator named Ryan O'Neill recalls the time that he was finally granted access to Glamis Castle. And he says, quote, "While preparing to ascend to a loft room with our equipment, the curator turned on the lights, or rather tried to. The bulb immediately blew, plunging us into a momentary hush. He said, I asked if this sort of thing was common. He said, the guide says, oh, yes. He's like, with a knowing smile, happens all the time. And this was apparently attributed to the same area where the gray lady or the ghost of Janet Douglas or Janet Campbell, however you want to say, where she is commonly seen. Another visitor made a post that as they entered this area, he looked and saw this translucent, beautiful woman in period clothing walking across this area. And he was just going, wow, look at her. Huh. And he watched her go across and then disappeared through a wall. And he said, when she did that, it took him aback. And then he realized that no one else seemed to have turned their attention to her.
Really?
So he thought, well, that was odd. But he said it was her image was almost like he was looking at a hologram that had been, you know, put there as a part of the tour.
Mm.
Yeah. So
kind of shimmery.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever.
Yeah. That shimmery look, which, you know, the people that have witnessed her spirit say that she gives off this weird shimmery aura. Yeah. So it's pretty interesting. I mean, you know, you get your chance to come in there and you're going, you know, the article that, and he's written several about Glamis Castle. He said, you know, you finally get your chance to go in and you're hoping beyond hope that you're going to get to, because he apparently applied for years and years and years and was never granted. Wow. And finally had the opportunity to go in. And he's like, please, please let something happen. I may not get this chance again. And, you know, It starts as soon as he walks in. He says, you know, it didn't disappoint, you know.
That's all.
Yeah. Now, one of the stories that is most famously associated with Glamis Castle is not necessarily a ghost story.
Hmm.
This is the story of the monster of Glamis. Now, the famous ghoulish resident of this old castle is nicknamed the Monster of Glamis. And the story begins on October 21st, 1821, with the birth and death of Thomas Lyons Bowes. He's the first born son of the then Lord Strathmore and his wife Charlotte. The newborn died in childbirth, a fact which was noted in the official records and taken as fact until stories began to circulate of an unnamed local midwife who had attended the birth of Thomas and claimed that He had survived and was born healthy.
Hmm.
Which brought the question, why did they report a death?
Right, right.
In 1904, an article was published in Notes and Queries, which is a quarterly journal. And in this article, the author said to have heard a story 60 years before that in Glamis Castle, there was a secret chamber where a deformed monster is kept locked away from the public eye.
Huh.
The story surrounding the mystery of Glamis asserted that this monster was Thomas Lyon Bowes, who should have been the proper heir to the Glamis inheritance, but was so physically deformed that he was hidden away.
He probably only had like a shorter third finger or something.
Maybe, yeah. Right.
And they're like, oh, that's hideous. Yeah. Let's lock him away. And he's like, it's just my finger. Yeah.
At a time when incest and inbreeding was so common, you know, they're like,
right.
Oh my God, you don't have, you know, a third eye and you mm-hmm. know, they're evenly spaced and you only have two right. nostrils, you know?
Right. Why do you have hideous. All your teeth? Yeah.
Which brings me to my second Simpsons reference tonight is the one where Lisa is telling Bart about some dream where she goes, and the people had five fingers, and Bart holds up his hand and goes, ooh, freak show.
Yeah. Yep. I remember that. That's good.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Oh, you know, yeah. He has a mouth, you know.
He only has five fingers. And
yeah, exactly. But, you know, so they attribute that, okay, so because of this child was unfortunately born with, you know, some level of birth defect and deformity. And because of the way society was, especially for these royals, that the shame would have been brought upon the family. So they just told everyone that he had died after he was born and had the funeral, recorded the death, but then locked this child away so that no one would ever find him. Now, this transformed into this dark secret that was kept by only a small circle of family members. And the secret was inherited along with the title of Lord Strathmore and the estate, which, according to this, just inheriting the title of Lord Strathmore seemed to have a depressing effect on the holder. It was like, as soon as you were named Lord Strathmore, stuff began to suck. You know, you're kind of like, oh my God, this, what have I done? Yeah. I didn't ask for this, you know?
Yeah. I don't want it. Why did it have to be Strathmore?
But the few lords who were informed of the existence of this quote monster, along with the house factor, which I learned is a Scottish term for the estate manager, the factor, have been described as having a pall cast over them, which is just this, you know, this feeling of depression, this weight, you know, they learn of this. They may be like, I'm the new Lord of Strathmore. And then they go, oh, by the way. And then it's like, you know, you just, a pall is cast over you. You just, you know, it's just, oh, this is terrible. I wish I had not known this, you know, because now you have to make the unfortunate decision of what to do about it. And of course, for your family, you're like, we have to keep this secret. But then you're like, now I know why there's so many weird noises coming from this part of the castle, is because it's, there's, you know, a human being locked up in there.
Now I know why my dad was so upset his whole time of being Earl of Strathmore.
Right.
And
And it says, you know, that family members and interested guests find out that they would be far happier being ignorant of this secret. But this continued for the better part of a century until the 14th Earl refused to take on the secret upon inheriting the estates from his father in 1904. And so he's
a, how do you do that?
No more.
Do you just say, do you let it out, or do you say, no, just don't tell me. I don't want to.
Yeah, one or the other. But, you know, descriptions of this, quote, monster are few and far between. But perhaps more common than you would expect for a family secret, which, if it's such a big secret, why don't we all know about it?
Mm-hmm.
Two of the early sightings of him were described as being a human toad or a half frog, half man.
That's gross sounding.
Right. And later on, the writer James Wentworth Day, who wrote The Queen Mother's Family Story about the residents of the castle, claimed to have been told, quote, his chest an enormous barrel, hairy as a doormat. His head ran straight into his shoulders, and his arms and legs were toy-like. And another description, quote, an enormous flabby egg.
Gross.
That's gross. Okay? That is gross. How horrible.
You know, barrel-chested and hairy, that's fine. Yeah, that's just a dude.
No neck, as
big dude. But then you get on the rest of it, and no neck, arms and legs, toy-like, and he looks like a flabby egg.
Yeah.
No, that ain't cool.
My thing is, if this is real, and there really was this child that they locked away, how did he live so stinking long?
Right.
You know, I mean, well, I guess there must have been somebody that was taking care of him, feeding him and everything. They didn't just,
yeah.
I mean, if they were going to lock him away and let him die as a child, that wouldn't have taken all that long. You know, might as well go ahead and kill him and get over with the suffering if you're going to be that cruel.
Yeah, it's not like he could go hunt his own game or anything as a newborn.
Right. Now, there are more stories.
Can you imagine the housemaid that gets put in charge of nursing this frog baby?
Yeah. I know.
You know, you're like, well, what's worse than being the Earl of Strathmore? Being his baby servant maid.
Right.
Lady.
Yeah. Having to catch all those flies.
Yeah. What do you have to do? Well, it's a long story, but let's just say, you ever heard of tape? I kind of put that up in windows and we catch his dinner.
Yeah, that's
that
right.
Way.
Right. So what is this? Is this fly paper? Yeah. Yeah. That's how he catches dinner. Yeah.
I invented fly paper to feed my lord.
That's right. But there are more stories which support the idea that there is a secret somewhere in the depths of Glamis Castle. In 1865, a workman at the castle came across a door which led into a long passage, and he saw a shape moving at the bottom. He passed this information on to his boss and was quickly told to take his family and immigrate to Australia. And his trip was paid for by the Earl.
Huh.
Yeah. Get gone.
Yep.
You know,
you shouldn't have seen.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, you know, vamanos, you know.
Leave or die.
Right.
That's your two options.
Now, stories circulated around aristocratic circles in Europe of the mystery at Glamis, and visitors to the castle frequently were trying to find the hidden chamber that supposedly housed this monster. Yeah, this is the worst kept family secret ever.
Mm-hmm. Sure is.
But in one story, a group entered every room in the house and hung towels from the windows so that when they went outside, they could look and make sure they had been in all the rooms. But they noticed that there was one that was not marked by the towel. So when they went back in, they were unable to find the entrance. So Lord Ernest Hamilton, a guest at the house, discovered a trap door concealing a hidden passage, and another guest pulled up the carpet in his room to find something similar, after which he was asked to leave the house.
And the country. Go to Australia.
Right, get out. Don't be pulling up the carpet looking for trapdoors.
Why do you think it'd be a good idea to go to somebody else's house and then start ripping their carpet up?
Exactly.
I would want you to leave the country. If you came to my house,
get out.
And I walk in the room and you're ripping my carpet up. You better hope you get to another country.
I mean, this would be the equivalent of like a guest coming to your home and then rifling through your medicine cabinet, trying to figure out what all's mm-hmm. going on. What's he hiding? You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Trying to dig through and, you know, find old family photographs in your diary or whatever. You know, these mm-hmm. people are like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
But like I said, a very poorly kept secret, apparently. Now, the monster may have been a result of another aristocratic precedent. Thomas's parents were first cousins once removed. So it is entirely possible that the child was born with genetic defects as a result of an incestuous relationship.
Yeah.
And his condition exaggerated over the years of excitable retellings among the Victorian upper class. So the monster, quote unquote, in the story, as this secret is retold among the elites, you know, it is embellished over and over and over to the point where it is a literal monster. But as Adam said, he may have just been missing part of a finger, or his eyes may have been out of alignment. You know, nothing too severe, but it branches out to the half man, half frog description.
Yep. Flabby egg.
Yeah. The flabby egg.
Dude, that flabby egg sounds so gross.
Oh, I know.
Like I'm trying to picture a flabby egg in my head. And
it's like a soft boiled Humpty Dumpty, you know,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm. with like rolls hanging off.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Yeah.
This is where the story of Humpty Dumpty comes from.
Oh, yeah. Humpty Dumpty got locked in a room. Humpty Dumpty went to his doom.
Well, roll on, 18-wheeler. I thought we was going to get a whole poem.
No, the next one I was going to say something about ripping up a carpet, and then I couldn't figure out what rhymed with carpet, and so I just gave up.
But these stories that were passed around, at least they explains the existence of a hidden room in the castle and that there was a terrible secret, which was to be kept hidden, as well as the sightings of a figure moving behind the battlements in the wings of the castle. So, you know, there's more and more evidence that there's some truth behind the stories, because people went in and found trap doors or, you know, long secret corridors, and they saw movement, they saw rooms that they couldn't access from inside. So there was at least evidence that, yeah, this castle is full of secret passages. Listen, a castle that doesn't have secret passages, what good is that?
Yeah, don't even call it a castle.
It better have some dadgum secret passages. Listen, and it better have paintings where I can poke out the eyes and watch people. Okay?
Right.
I don't want it if it doesn't have that.
Well, and here's the thing. You know it's a castle because a regular house, you wouldn't be able to hang towels from all the windows without me knowing.
Yeah, right.
You know what I mean? And you wouldn't be able to rip up carpet without me hearing you doing it unless you were in a castle.
Yeah.
You start ripping up carpet at my house, I'll hear you from the living room. Yeah. I'll come running.
Can you imagine being the Earl and you're just, you know, wandering through the garden or whatever, and then there's this, all these guests are out there standing on the lawn looking up, and you look and your linens are hanging out from the windows. You'd be like, what the hell are y'all doing?
Yeah, right.
It's a game. It's a game.
Well, play another game that doesn't involve my sheets.
That's
please.
Right. Look, we don't have unlimited towels. This is not a Hilton.
Right, right. You're going to have to start washing your own.
Now, skeptics feel that if the story of the Monster of Glamis was true and that it was such a secret, again, why are we discussing it now? Mm-hmm. Family secrets have a way of coming out, either because of loose lips or rival parties seeking to tarnish a family's reputation, or, as in this case, completely by accident. And according to this story, the secret was accidentally discovered by one of the maids centuries ago. But instead of keeping the secret to herself, she went straight to the Lord to confront him. Perhaps may have even tried to blackmail him with this secret and ended up paying for that mistake.
Well, yeah.
The Lord, who absolutely wanted his secret to be kept, ordered his men to silence her. Her tongue was to be removed so she could no longer speak. Now, the men caught the maid, cut out her tongue, but the girl managed to escape. She ran across the courtyard, but was eventually captured and killed. Her ghost has been seen in the courtyard while blood is gushing from her mouth.
Wow.
This would be terrifying.
Yeah, right.
Her spirit is said to race around the grounds on moonlit evenings, hysterically indicating her terribly ravaged mouth. Pointing.
Can you just imagine? You're walking, peaceful, moonlit night, and you're walking out there. All of a sudden, this apparition runs up to you and goes and then runs off.
Right.
And
blood,
you're like,
coming out of her mouth. The party's coming all together at the end of the little investigation. Mm-hmm. And be like, we saw the boy sitting on the stone. We saw Lady Gray. She was beautiful. And then that guy's going, screw y'all. I saw this. Mm-hmm. I saw the maid with no tongue screaming at me. Yeah.
I saw blood spitter. What? Why did I get that one?
Yeah. So, I mean, it would be easy to assume that the story of the tongueless woman was developed and embellished over the decades, perhaps concocted as a warning not to go searching for the hidden chambers or the disfigured Earl that roamed them. But then there is this account, and this story reportedly dates back to the 19th century. It is said that a guest at Glamis Castle, awake late into the night, stood at his window gazing out across the grounds. As he looked toward the opposite tower, he noticed someone staring back at him from a facing window. The face was ghastly, unnaturally pale, with large, sorrowful eyes that seemed to plead for attention. The visitor stood frozen, unable to look away. Then, without warning, the face vanished abruptly, as though it had been yanked backwards by some unseen force. Moments later, a series of blood-curdling screams tore through the castle corridors and echoed into the night, leaving the shaken guest rooted in place. An hour later, still unsettled, he returned to the window. What he saw next disturbed him further. In the courtyard below, a shadowy figure crept slowly across the stone path. It appeared to be an elderly woman, bent nearly double beneath the weight of a large bundle strapped across her back. She shuffled forward into the moonlight, her outline briefly illuminated, and then gradually dissolved into darkness.
That's weird. Yeah.
So this was reportedly an account by a guest at Glamis Castle in the 19th century. So somewhere in the 1800s, this was the experience of one particular guest. So who knows? Maybe he did see, you know, the disfigured Earl. And I don't know how this old crone with the heavy backpack works into it. Maybe she's dragging him in a sack, you know, back to where he's supposed to be. You know, I don't know.
Maybe try to escape Egg Boy. come back.
But they said, who did that spectral face belong to? And what mm-hmm. was that woman carrying? Now, over the years, several people, including members of the castle staff, have claimed to see the same pale face still peering out from a high window. And some believe it belonged to a servant girl who witnessed a terrible crime. According to one chilling version of this tale, her tongue was cruelly cut out to ensure her silence. Other accounts go further still, claiming her hands were severed as well.
Oh, geez.
Now, here's the kicker. Years later, the original visitor was said to be traveling through a remote region of Italy. While visiting a monastery, he received unsettling news from one of the priests. A woman lived at a nearby convent, the priest explained. Once a great beauty who had worked in a grand Scottish house before suffering horrific injuries. Her hands had been cut off and her tongue removed.
Oh, wow.
So the same visitor that had this bizarre experience years later comes across this poor woman that is living in a convent being cared for by the nuns. Her hands had been cut off and her tongue was removed after she had worked in a grand Scottish home.
What did that poor guy do to deserve having all of this happen to him?
No kidding. No kidding. He goes all the way to Italy. Maybe he had even forgotten that he had experienced this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had put it out of his mind.
Yep.
But he'd most likely heard the stories, and then here she is. I was like, how the heck, you know, of all the convents and all the work.
Yeah, right. You had to walk into mine.
Now, this last part is another story that resulted in a walled up room deep within the castle. Now, this room is called the Room of Skulls, and the scene of horrible suffering and agonizing death. A group of, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this word right, Ogilvies? I'm guessing. It's another family. A group of Ogilvies were on the run from their mortal enemies, the Lindsays, and sought refuge at Glamis Castle. The resident Lord Glamis locked them in a room, assuring them they would never be found. And they never were. Lord Glamis hated the Ogilvies almost as much as the Lindsays and the group there to starve to death. Centuries later, an Earl of Strathmore came upon this hidden room and discovered that it was full of skeletons. Wow. As the story goes, he fainted on the spot and the room was bricked up forever. I'm telling you, becoming Earl of Strathmore, it's terrible.
Yeah, something happens when you get that
title.
Oh,
you'll be Earl of Strathmore. Like hell I will.
Yeah, right? Can I go to Australia?
I will be Earl of Sandwich. Get me out of here.
Yeah. I'll be Earl of Goodbye, Earl.
Yeah.
Sorry, Dixie Chicks came into my head.
I like it. But imagine, you know, you're such a whatever. I can't say the word I'm thinking of.
Right.
That you hate another family. And this family knows that you two hate one another. And so mm-hmm. they come to seek refuge. You know, the Ogilvies show up because, man, the Lindsays hate us. But we also know that the people, the Glamis family, they hate them too. They hate the Lindsays too. So maybe they'll protect us. And the Glamis says, yeah, we hate all y'all. We hate everybody.
You more.
We hate you just about as much. we're going to lock you up and throw away the key.
Mm-hmm.
So peace out.
If I could put the other ones in the room next to you,
that's right.
I would.
If I could let you both fight it out to the death in this little bricked up room, then my life would be complete.
Yep.
I can go back to wandering around being a big sourpuss, you know?
Yep. And talking about my egg time.
Yeah. Go play with Humpty Dumpty. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Yeah. So, like we said, you know, crazy haunted, crazy active, insane history that has brought about even more insane legends and stories. But I have always felt that these legends, these stories, as outrageous as they may be, there is a nugget of truth in all of them, because
these people
documented this stuff. They wrote out what they did, and you know, centuries later, you know, their own descendants would find the evidence of the crazy crap that they did and be like, can you believe this? You know, can you believe they would do something like this? And then they turn around and do something just as heinous, you know?
Well, and after a while, the question is, can you believe it? Yeah.
Yeah, I can believe it.
Yep. Can you believe they did that? Yeah, because we're about to do something even worse, right. So I can believe that they did it.
Right.
You know?
But the real question is do you guys believe it? Okay.
Right.
Let us know what you think about Glamis Castle. And the best place to do that is in our Facebook group. It's called The Graveyard. We've got thousands of members there just sharing stories and opinions and jokes and everything. It's a private group, so it's safe. Your boss isn't going to see a post in there that, you know, you believe in Bigfoot or you're interested in ghosts or UFOs. You know, it's all cool. We all love that stuff, and we just want to hear your stories. Yep. Don't forget to go check out our website, which is graveyardpodcast.com. And there you can find links to purchase Graveyard Tales merchandise. You can listen to the show and you can become a patron. And as Adam said at the beginning of the show, we feel like it is a fantastic bargain at any level to get all of that bonus content, whether it's the ad-free versions, whether it's the video versions, whether it's side quest. Whatever you choose, just know you're getting a ton of extra content and you are helping support Graveyard Tales. And Adam and I appreciate it so very much. We could not do this without you. So until next time, we'll save you a seat in the graveyard.
See you soon.